Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Seriously Risky Business, the podcast that we do here at Risky Biz HQ, which is mostly of relevance to government and policy types. My name is Patrick Gray, and I am joined, of course, today by Tom Uren. G'day, Tom.
G'day, Patrick.
Before we get going, I'd just like to say thanks to the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative for supporting this work, and also to our founding corporate sponsor, Proofpoint. Now, Tom, we've got a couple of things to talk about today. It's interesting, though, that the first item we're going to talk about, we actually did speak about that in yesterday's main Risky Business podcast, but I wound up cutting it from the edit because we just couldn't find a way to make it interesting, but you have actually managed to do that. US President Joe Biden has issued or published an executive order on signals intelligence collection that is mostly designed, I mean, in my mind, it's mostly designed to assuage European paranoia about how US signals intelligence and, you know, cyber collection actually operates. Your view is a little bit more generous than that, but why don't you walk us through exactly what the executive order says?
Well, the intention is to make signals intelligence collection more compatible with European Union human rights law. So it says things like defining a series of permitted national security objectives and explicitly prohibiting some others. It requires activities taken into consideration like the privacy and civil liberties of your targets, regardless of their nationality.
Did you just say civil liberties? I think
civil
you did.
Civil liberties. So it, in my mind, it does a whole lot of things that the intelligence community already mostly does.
But it spells them out. And this is, I also found this very interesting, right? Which is, it's saying, you know, here's an executive order that will prohibit us from doing all of this stuff that we already don't do. But that's not to say there isn't value in, you know, having those practices and guidelines sort of all spelled out in the one place, particularly when you're trying to convince European data regulators that you're not doing a bunch of bad faith stuff, right?
I actually liked it in general, yeah. In the sense that it, to me, if you're trying to put signals intelligence collection on an ethical basis, these all make sense. So my perspective is that it mostly does run on an ethical basis, but I particularly like, you know, treating everyone like they're a human, basically, is what it comes down to. And there's...
Well, it's sort of a recognition that everybody has rights, right?
Not just exactly. And just because they're a foreigner and they're not a taxpayer doesn't mean that we can treat them like crap. They've still got rights. You know, we need to collect intelligence, but we can still respect people as much as we can in that process. I thought that was all good. One thing that sort of annoys me in this whole debate is that Europeans always talk about American surveillance law, and it's not surveillance, it's intelligence collection. And there's a difference. Surveillance to me is spying on someone continuously forever.
Yeah, like the implication there is like it's like CCTV, which is cameras on an open space and sort of treating the internet the same way. And I think there was a lot of misunderstanding in the public about the way that, you know, what bulk collection actually meant and what, you know, when things were actually considered to have been collected, you know, and the order of authorizations and things like that. But you're right. Like, ultimately, I think a lot of people have been left with the impression that, you know, signals intelligence was about just collecting vast troves of information and then just going through it with a fine-tooth comb to see who's been naughty and who's been nice.
Yeah, and to me, that distinction gets to the heart of what the perception is versus what the reality is. So most people... There are targets that are under what I would call surveillance, and they're probably people like terrorists who at any moment could do something terrible, so you need to know where they are all the time, or perhaps someone like Putin. The vast majority of people, even if their intelligence targets are not under surveillance, you're after a particular piece of information that they might happen to know. So, you know, you don't care what they had for lunch. You care what they think about, you know, maybe foreign policy or the disposition of military forces or something like that.
I mean, there would be some targets that are surveilled, right? But you're right, that's a different that's a different thing, right? I mean, I think one thing that you've spelled out here in a somewhat hilarious way is to point out that, you know, this executive order is being driven by America trying to grease the wheels a little bit when it comes to transatlantic commerce, right? And you're saying, I'll just read from your newsletter here where it says, one might even suggest the US government amending its SIGINT practices to enable transatlantic commerce is a measure of the US's status as an enterprise-owned state. Ouch. But really, that's what this is about. It's about putting all of this in one place, spelling out the guardrails, on SIGINT collection so that, you know, European companies and governments feel comfortable with cross, you know, transatlantic data transfers. But here's the funny part, right? Which is that, of course, European governments and the EU, everybody's keen on this. You know, the US government's keen on it as well. But then there's the, you know, what is it, which court is it? The European Court of Justice, right? Yes. Yeah. So the European Court of Justice keeps striking down all of these efforts to enable transatlantic commerce because they're saying, oh, well, you know, clearly the Americans are a bunch of human rights of invading maniacs, right? So they keep striking these sort of regulations down. And this one might well go the same way. Like, despite this executive order, some of these data transfers might be considered to be illegal.
Yeah, I suspect it will get struck down. And it's entirely ridiculous in the sense that nations spy on each other and nations at the same time also want to do business with each other. So if you take the European Court of Justice's position to the logical conclusion, you would do no trade with China as well. You wouldn't exchange data with China because exactly the same concern applies, probably worse. And you would sort of squeeze yourself into this position where you don't do any trade with anyone because when national security conflicts with trade, people will do both those things. People will take advantage of data that they have available. So I think that the focus on the US in particular is kind of just ridiculous because the overwhelming benefits for both blocks, for both the EU and the US, are that the trade is valuable and the sort of harm that intelligence collection does is very, very small in comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and I joked with you earlier before we started recording that this whole thing just looks designed to make Germans feel better, right? Because there's this real, really deep suspicion of the US. And I'm finding this a really interesting, I mean, don't get me wrong, the US earned the level of distrust people show it over a number of decades, right? But I don't understand quite why their SIGINT practices have caused them so much grief. Like, I think a lot of this distrust of America comes from things like the Vietnam War, you know, and even more recent things like Iraq and stuff like that. So it just seems that, like, the Snowden disclosures fed into this narrative of the United States being this sort of malevolent force in global affairs, and that wasn't entirely justified. And now we've got the Russia-Ukraine war. It's sort of exposing some of that thinking as being a bit faulty, ultimately, right? Where you've got a bunch of people of different political stripes who are sort of anti-imperialist, who are kind of against the United States helping Ukraine fight another empire. And it just seems like everybody's politics, and particularly in Europe and in particularly in countries like Germany, everyone's politics have just got a little bit confused, you know, which is why they're happy to build critical networks using Huawei equipment, but don't want American and European companies to be able to exchange data. Like, you know, I'm trying to expand on what you were just saying, and I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but are you with me?
Yeah, 100%. Look, I like the EO, right? Let me go back to what I like, because I think it spells out things. I think the whole debate that has hung up transatlantic data flows is ridiculous.
Yes.
Debate is probably not the right word.
But do you see also that it's rooted in some of this America bad reflexive politics that has been around for a long time?
Yeah. So I agree, but I also think that if you are going to set up a data exchange agreement, it actually makes sense for the EU and for the US and for any country to say, look, here are some safeguards we want to implement. I think that, you know, the process of, I think it was originally Safe Harbor and then Privacy Shield and this are kind of getting iteratively closer and closer. And it's really just expending a lot of time and effort fiddling really at the margins of making any difference at all. I kind of feel I would really like just both the EU and the US to get over it and move on, because they're not making much difference at this point. They're just wasting time and effort.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I like the EO for the same reason you do, which is even though it just spells out a bunch of stuff that like was already the case, having that in one spot, which is a simple to read document that says, here's the conditions under which we will do signals intelligence collection. Here's when we won't do it. These are the sorts of safeguards. Like having that in one place, that was something that's been missing, really, because you kind of need to be a bit of an expert to understand how collection occurs, right? And under what circumstances and what the restrictions are. So just having all of that in one place, even if there's nothing new in there, yeah, having it in one place very clearly spelled out, I mean, that's a winner, right? Right there.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I really like I said before, the part about treating everyone as a person with particular rights, or that, you know, at times we're going to trample over because we've got national security concerns, but, you know, when we don't have to, we shouldn't just be doing it willy-nilly. That's good. I would describe that as a bit of a change. A change in attitude, if not in practice.
Yeah, yeah. Now, look, the other feature article that you wrote this week was about Joe Sullivan, the former chief security officer of Uber and, you know, all of that. But we already did cover that in the main Risky Business podcast. So I figure we'll give that a miss in the Seriously Risky Biz podcast that we are recording right now. This one, that's the Seriously Risky Business podcast. But there is one short item that you included here that I thought would make sense to talk about, because it's about this... You know, there were a bunch of headlines saying Albania nearly invoked NATO's Article 5, right, in response to cyber attacks against it from Iran, right? So the headlines are all, oh, big scary Article 5, you know, like this could have led to serious escalation, and everyone's sort of flapping their arms about it. But, you know, people keep saying Article 5, but it does not mean what they think it means.
Yeah, so I just really sort of reflect Dmitry Alperovich's thoughts on it, relay, I guess, his thoughts, which is that Article 5's all about defense. In terms of a cyber incident, defense means mostly incident response. So yeah, you know, maybe we'd
we maybe invoked we'd Article 5 so yeah, that we could bring in Mandiant, you know, like it's you know, and I guess there could be a response that goes outside of incident response. There might be incident response techniques that involve going out and like destroying a C2 server or something like that.
Yep.
But people are acting like invocation of Article 5 means the missile silos get opened, you know, and it ain't that.
Yeah. Now, having said that, there's the practical effect of, yes, here have some incident responders. I still think it's a politically significant moment, and that when it does happen, it's all about the politics rather than the practical effects that will make it significant. And part of that, I think, is that it would have to be something that's causing quite a lot of grief for the country on the receiving end.
In this case, it certainly hits the bar.
Yeah. I also think that invoking Article 5 is problematic in terms of a cyber incident, because at the time you often don't know what's the cause. Like, you know, so the actual incident Albania referred to happened in mid-July, and it wasn't until September that they actually, actually said, you know, it was Iran. So 5 months later, are you going to invoke Article 5? No, because you figured out what the problem is and you're doing something else, like you've resolved the problem.
Well, it's not 5 months. If July to September is 2 months, but yes, I mean, I still take what you mean, that's not ideal. And I mean, I think, you know, and it's funny that you echoed Dmitry's thoughts on this, and it's a conversation I've had with him before as well, just about Article 5 generally, which is that people misunderstand that it really is, you know, it's about defending territory, right? It's more about like, if someone invades your land, you can invoke Article 5 and NATO allies can help evict your enemy from your land, right? Which is, you know, the reason Putin didn't really want Ukraine being part of NATO is because they would respond if he did try to invade. So yeah, I agree with you that it's politically significant, but I do think people go a little bit over the top with this stuff, because I think for a long time, the escalation risks of cyber campaigns weren't really well understood. And I still think there's a way to go in terms of how well we understand how this stuff can spiral and lead to bigger effects and bigger responses. But I just think that there's this thing that happens in the media, which is, oh, someone nearly invoked a treaty because of this, you know, or someone found that it violated the Talon Manual or it violated international law. So that means war, you know, and it just ain't that.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. That's kind of what the media does, right? I still think invoking...
You do realize, like, we are the media as well. Though,
well, I right? think that's what most media does, yeah.
Non-specialist media, let's just say that. Yeah.
So I still think it will be a significant moment. But I also kind of think that we've seen cyber capabilities actually being used in war, in the invasion of Russia. I mean, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. And to me, it's when things reach that level of seriousness that Article 5 really, you know, would become useful. And it seems likely to me that the cyber incident will be part of some other broader campaign, you know.
Yes.
And it's not going to be, they cybered us, so we're going to invoke Article 5. It's going to be, because they invaded us, we're going to invoke Article 5.
But, I mean,
and
everyone
cyber
was
part of that.
Everyone was talking about, you know, Article 5 when the Nord Stream pipelines got blown up, and it's just not relevant.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's an interesting part there in that we still don't know for sure. who did it. Like, there's no actual concrete proof, right? And so
it is funny though that everyone's talking about how that had to be some really the Nord Stream, you know, pipelines being disrupted had to be some sort of tremendously sophisticated operation, and ooh, how did anyone do it without being detected, when really all you would have needed is a fishing boat, some explosives, some lead weights, and a bit of sonar equipment, and away you go. Like, I was talking to a friend about this, and they're saying, oh, you know, it would have had to be a very sophisticated thing. I said, man, if we sat down with a pen and paper and a six pack and worked out what we would need to do it, I think you'd be surprised at how easy it would be.
Yeah, so I think the analogy there is that it's a big step to sort of react to something that you aren't 100% sure exactly who did it and how.
And it didn't even happen on your territory as well.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
It's more the key point when it comes to Article 5, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so I think there's some analogies there with the sort of cyber operations. And so I think it gets very difficult to have any real-time response that's actually, you know, meaningful.
Yeah, no, agreed. Well, Tom, that's it for this edition of Seriously Risky Biz. Bit of a shorter edition this week, but it's a pleasure to chat to you, my friend. Always good stuff. Newsletter is fantastic, as always, this week. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Matt.